Positive Outcomes, a podcast for the P&O community. Thank you for joining us. I'm Simon Beals, your host for this episode. We have a great show for you today. Gary Elliott of Canadian Orthopedic Supply is with us to discuss redefining bracing and support in extremity care. Gary Elliott has been the president and co-owner of the Canadian Orthopedic Supply since 1999 and is the Canadian distributor of PUSH products. And we work closely with Gary to co-distribute PUSH products within Canada. Thank you for coming on, Gary.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
Okay. So I want to start our discussion first off by saying kind of my past experience with PUSH, which actually started about 6 or 7 years ago at OT World. And for those who have not had the opportunity to attend OT World, it's this massive 3-arena venue that takes place every 2 years in Leipzig, Germany. I was there with Orthoped, and our chief purpose of being there was basically just to go shopping. So I'm in for that. To walk through the venues, it takes about 3 to 4 hours of just walking the floor, not stopping to talk to anybody and not really kind of stopping to examine individual booths and so forth. So it's just a massive, massive venue. And at some point in those 4 days, I came across the PUSH booth, and PUSH was absolutely my take-home product of that entire adventure. So it's taken quite a bit of time. So in just a few years ago, we were able to start to work with Gary and Maribel at Canadian Orthopedic Supply and their team and the PUSH family of products. So it was a long wait, but it's been well worth it. So let's start picking that brain with all of that experience. So, I mean, you've been involved with bracing over so many years. What's changed? You know, what are the advantages and disadvantages to different forms of soft bracing and splinting?
Yeah, the biggest change has been in materials. The designs, certainly you can change things here and there and make small improvements in the designs, but essentially design of most braces has remained fairly consistent over the years. But the material has drastically changed, and I think it's allowed for a lot more people to embrace wearing a brace, whereas before they were quite restrictive and quite hot. Things are a heck of a lot more comfortable to wear now, and as a result, they function better.
So I'm going to assume that the majority of our clinicians are familiar with, I'll call them a standard neoprene type of a brace. How does PUSH and PUSH products bring something different to the table?
Yeah, neoprene to me is really going, it's going out the door. It's becoming a commodity item that is basically sold as cheaply as possible. And they're all neoprene products are either made in China or Mexico. And the difference that you're getting now with higher end bracing, if you will, but we can say it's higher end, it definitely is more expensive, is that the materials have gotten a lot more user-friendly, a lot more breathable, a lot thinner. And the wearer is benefiting greatly by that, by having a product that is a lot more lightweight and definitely easier to put on and more comfortable. So for those who are willing to take a look at something that is more on the expensive side, it is definitely going to be a little bit more outlay of cash for the patient. The products are hugely better. There is a big leap in quality from the neoprene days.
So what type of kind of outcomes should a clinician expect from a patient that chooses to wear, a higher end product such as PUSH versus having put them into a neoprene-based standard product?
Sure. I think first off, they're going to see that the patient will come back on their next appointment wearing the brace. This is an experience that some clinicians and some doctors have told us about, is that particularly with PUSH, is that the next time that doctor sees the patient, they're usually wearing the product. And that's a huge change, because I'm quite certain a lot of money has been spent on bracing by patients, and they'll wear it for a few weeks or a month, and then it just sits in the closet or in a drawer somewhere, and they don't want to put it on again. The experience with PUSH is people people wear the product, it feels better to wear it, and they feel more confident wearing it. So the outcome that you're going to get as a clinician in putting a push brace on should be what you expect from a brace, is that it's going to get worn and it's going to function the way to deal with the injury that you're prescribing it for.
Any kind of, you know, I like what I call good days at the office stories. Any come to mind in terms of interactions that you've had with clinicians and their patients, you know, in a push product being prescribed and kind of, you know, an outcome, you know, that was received from it?
Well, the one that comes to mind for me is a physiotherapy clinic that we deal with in Brampton. Had a soccer player, not a professional by any means, but a guy who took soccer very seriously, played it fairly competitively. This guy was in his mid-30s, and he was a big guy. He was over 200 pounds, over 6 feet tall, and he was what they refer to as a striker in soccer. So he's the guy who's up front, who's expected to really power the ball into the net. And he was wearing bilateral lace-up with a figure-eight strap ankle braces. And was quite disappointed that those braces would not allow his foot to get into the proper position so that he could strike the ball. He had to kind of turn his foot sideways and hit the ball with the side of his foot rather than dorsiflex the foot and hit the ball directly with the top of his foot. So he wasn't a happy camper. He had to alter his game, and he was not at all impressed with that. So we put him into the push kicks ankle brace, which is made specifically to fit into a cleated shoe and has actually been tested by the Dutch national women's soccer team. And it does allow for a bit of quite a lot of dorsi and plantar flexion, but will restrict that inversion movement that is necessary to protecting the ankle. And this guy was just super happy after that. He could play the game the way he wanted to. And so that outcome, I was really happy to hear that, because that's what we always describe the Kix brace as being able to do, and was able to function. And there was some evidence right from the playing field that it worked.
So that raises an interesting topic. So, I mean, as most of our listeners will know, I've got a chiropractic background. So from my education and my world, if the body has a joint and we stop that joint from moving, you know, it impacts the joints above and below. So if we've got a joint, it stops moving, the body tries to create a joint somewhere else. So it raises that issue of, you know, mobilization versus immobilization. How does push approach that in terms of its bracing and its designs for its various products?
Push is very concerned with freedom of movement. Their motto is actually push for freedom. And they design braces, three different categories of support: care, med, and ortho. And they design those braces to address specific imperfections, let's say, or weaknesses in different joints. And the brace is there so that it will protect you from getting injured in any further capacity, but still allow you to move and still allow you to perform whatever daily activity it is you want to do, whether it's sports related or whether it's just, you know, something that you have to function with on the job. The brace is there to protect you from getting further into an injury position, but will still allow you to move. And that's very important for push. They do not want to immobilize anything.
So is this the direction that bracing is taking, or is this really a design philosophy that has really been kind of taken to heart by the designers of the push products?
I think it's particular to push. I'm not really certain that there are other companies that focus so intently on allowing you to continue to move while still protecting you. I'm sure by default there are lots of braces that do that, but I'm not so sure that there are actually companies where that is their motto, basically, or their real means to an end.
Right. So before we start kind of narrowing down our discussion a little bit, you know, when I look at the bracing market and the splinting market, it's a huge entity, you know, found at all different sources and lots of players involved in it, you know, at different levels of the market, higher, mid, lower end, all of those types of things. How can we best direct our clinicians into what they should look at, what they should factor in to the decision-making of what product or product line is best suited for their patients. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would say this. Certainly there are, you're right, there are a lot of players in the market, and that's evidenced to you. You were talking about OT World, and the show that I always go to in Germany is called Medica. They're enormous, and there are convention centers filled with companies that do nothing but bracing. But really, it does boil down to what you were saying, that there are low-end, mid-range, and high-end products. And there are distinct differences in quality when you take a look at those low, mid, and high-end product ranges. So as a clinician or business owner, usually the clinicians are somehow associated with the business that they're working for, they have to decide, you know, where do we want to position ourselves? Do we want to have an entire range of products for the patient to choose from? Have we got space for that? Do we want to be able to display these products and say, here's your low end, here's your mid range, here's your high end product, and let them choose? Or are we going to be very specific and just say, we're only interested, for example, in selling the high end? And to me, I think when you're talking to your specific market, Simon, the market that OrthoPet sells to, I think they should only be concerned with the high end. The low and mid range product lines are all covered at every pharmacy, every drugstore, and every home healthcare store in the country. You're not going to compete with those places for the variety of products that they can offer, and you probably won't be able to compete on their price either. But if you focus your business to just sell the best of the best, in, you know, whatever that may be in your opinion, then you know that you are giving your patient the best possible thing in your mind, and should expect a good outcome from that.
And we're also huge advocates of the critical role that the clinician plays in prescribing. So in doing their, you know, diagnostic and their, you know, expected outcomes and looking towards what those outcomes are going to be. We feel that the clinician is key to making kind of that decision, or at least bringing that information to the patient in order to help, you know, whether it be them or part of their team, to make that decision and what the best product is going to be for that particular individual that's going to produce the most, you know, positive outcome possible. Let's move on.
Yeah, I can probably add to that too.
Absolutely.
I agree. The clinician is really, it's key that the clinician get to know exactly what the patient expects to do with this brace. Are they somebody who is super active and wants to return to a particular sport? Or are they somebody who really just needs this for walking or for a light jog, that sort of thing? It's important, I think, for the clinician to know the lifestyle of the patient so that they can tailor a brace that's going to fit that lifestyle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's focus a little bit more now on kind of on push products specifically. And so it's no secret to anyone that I've ever approached with push, that I'm a huge fan of the product line and was absolutely thrilled that we could start working with you to take push out, you know, across Canada, as you've been doing as well. So as I mentioned, it started for me at OT World, and the first product that I saw there from Push was the Push CMC. So let's have a little chat about the Push CMC.
Absolutely. CMC, if I didn't have that product, I wouldn't be in business today. That product is definitely our number one selling item by far, and it changed the industry. If you take a look at every other thumb brace on the market, they are all an immobilizer of sorts. Their solution to dealing with your osteoarthritic pain in the basal joint of your thumb is to immobilize it in XYZ position. The CMC does not think that way. The CMC is a dynamic brace. It wants you to continue to do exactly whatever you are doing during the day, but it's designed such that the carpal metacarpal bone is seated at the proper angle into the socket that it's supposed to be resting in. And when you go to make that pinching motion or that opposing motion with your thumb and your forefinger, the cushioning around that bone is used to protect it and keep it in place. It's extremely effective. People who have this condition know right away that as soon as they put it on, that it's working. And, you know, as a result, it's the number one brace for osteoarthritis and basal joint of the thumb worldwide right now.
It made a lasting impression on me. And as I said, when I saw it first at OT World, it was like, wow. I think I'm intrigued by things that have that level of biomechanical design, where you're really looking at that anatomy, functional anatomy, biomechanics, physiology, and that type of thing. And that factors into how a product is created to work around that particular joint.
Yeah. The person who originally came up with the idea for this product was a hand therapist from the States named Judy Kolditz. She is known around the world for her expertise in the motion of the thumb. I once attended a lecture of hers that was an hour and a half just on the motion of the thumb. My head was spinning at the end of it. I had no idea. She's since retired, but that lady was one who originally got it started, and certainly started with an incredible knowledge of the motion of the thumb.
So we branching out from the CMC brace, how has Push looked at the element of that immobilization and mobilization? What does it do within its design to be able to facilitate kind of both of those elements designed into their products?
Okay, so they have Push within each product category. They'll have elements of brace that are rigid and elements that are not rigid. So if you take the Push Med Knee, for example, it is a soft brace using their Simpress material. It will allow for full flexion and extension without any restriction. But the rigid parts of the brace, to protect for medial lateral instabilities, are positioned in such a way that they deal with just that. You cannot move medially or laterally with that product, and yet it still allows you freedom of movement for everything else that you want to do. So each product has some element of rigidity to it, depending on the level of restriction or protection that the patient needs.
And then how about the strapping? How about the straps?
Yes, the straps are usually, again, it depends on whether you're talking care, med, or ortho level brace. But in the care level, we're just concerned with a compression product. There's no rigidity in that product. So the straps there are largely elastic, and it's up to you to how tightly you do them up. When you get into med, you're starting to get into a mix of straps, some of which would be static, meaning they have no elasticity to them. And that gives you a little more control, a little more retention of the joint. And then when you get to the ortho level, you're getting into a brace that is largely made of more rigid material and is there to completely protect somebody who is in the sort of a chronic stage of an injury.
Now, for the range of or within the ankle range of products that Push offers, they actually did some original research looking at ankle inversion sprains. Can you talk about that research?
Yeah, certainly. It was a study done by an institute in Stuttgart, Germany, called the Fraunhofer Institute. Fraunhofer exists basically to test all kinds of different materials and products. And Push uses Fraunhofer to test their raw materials and make sure that the stretch quality and durability is there. So the idea came up that, you know, if an ankle brace is being worn primarily to prevent an inversion sprain, why don't we see how effective these ankle braces are at actually doing that? So they created an ankle prosthetic model that can articulate on all different types of planes. This prosthetic is covered with sensors all around it, and it's put inside a shoe. It sits on a plate that allows them to change the angulation for inversion, eversion, plantar flexion, dorsiflexion. And then a load is put on the top of the ankle, similar to what your body weight would be if you were going into an inversion movement. So the test was done on five leading ankle braces. Obviously, the Push Ortho Equi was the one that we used, that Push wanted to test. That's their strongest ankle brace. And it was tested alongside some other major name brands that will be very familiar to all the listeners here. And the orthoaque, we blew them all away. On the inversion test, which is a quick 3-second loading and unloading of the ankle, it was shown that the orthoaque allowed only 3 degrees of inversion movement. Nobody else really came close to that. And then when they did the plantar flexion plus inversion movement, again, the orthoaque came out on top. Other braces came into line fairly similarly with the plantar flexion movement, which I thought was good because you do want to allow a certain degree of plantar flexion. You still need people to be able to walk in these things. But once you get into that plantar flexion movement, you're really susceptible to an inversion movement. And that most braces just did not perform very well on that test at all. Whereas the orthoaque we did exceedingly well, only allowed 1.1 degrees of ankle inversion. So, you know, while this brace is a really radical design from what people are used to in North America, that brace has been around in Europe for 20 years. It is the number one ankle brace that Push sells, and it's the number one selling ankle brace in Germany.
And I think, I mean, I've read that study, and we can certainly make that available to any of our listeners that are interested in reading the full study and the complete document. What amazes me most is that the effectiveness that's been proven by that research and the profile of the brace itself. I think that's probably the most surprising element, is that you can get that level of stabilization and control from a device that has as low a profile as it does.
Yeah, and also it doesn't have any stiff elements on the lateral side of the ankle. The strength of the brace is on the medial side of the ankle, which again completely changes the way people think about ankle bracing. And that's why it is a little bit, when I show it at trade shows and, you know, doctor shows and stuff like that, they kind of are a bit taken aback at first, going, well, how does this actually work? But by its design, and you can see in the study, it's proven that it does work. And the reason, there's a reason they didn't want to put anything on the outside of the ankle, on the lateral side. If you have an ankle injury, there's usually a lot of swelling right there. That's where the swelling tends to appear. And to put something rigid right on top of that, or have some sort of a heavy strap right coming across that, it can be uncomfortable. So they left that as free and open as possible and concentrated on the strength of the brace being on the medial side.
And I don't ever recall ever hearing a patient requesting that they have a thicker, more cumbersome, hotter version of a brace, to be able to wear for their injury. Tell me the difference between the orthoaque and the Kix.
Okay, well, the Kix was designed specifically to fit into a cleated shoe. So it works on the same concept as the orthoaque. It's just slimmed down even further. So the orthoaque would be recommended for a patient who is definitely in a chronic position with their ankle. They've probably had multiple ankle injuries in their history, and they've torn or partially torn a number of ligaments at one point. Those people have an inherent weakness that requires the rigidity of the aqui, but the Kix is designed for people who want to return to sport. So they know they've got a little bit of weakness in their ankle, but they've done the rehab. They've gotten back into the game, but they do need some protection from a recurrence of an injury, or we actually do have a fair amount of teams that wear these preventatively too. But it's designed, it's slimmed down so that it will fit into a cleated shoe, which all of us know those are extremely thin. And it also was designed so that nothing would interrupt the wearer's feel of the turf or feel of the ball that they happen to be kicking. There's nothing to interrupt that. It's just as low profile as you can get.
I guess that's part of the advantage of a Dutch company being responsible for the designs.
Yeah.
Another kind of problematic area that I'm sure many of our clinicians have come across are athletes that largely participate barefoot and the challenges of managing their injuries. What does Push have that might be a suitable consideration for barefoot athletes?
So we, for barefoot, you know, gymnastics, martial arts, that sort of sport, we would recommend the Push Sports Ankle 8. It's a super thin design, does not have any stiffeners in it at all. It is a pull-on brace with a figure of eight elastic strap. It does provide a very significant degree of support, depending on how tightly you do the figure eight. But the important point for barefoot athletes in performing their sport is that the heel of this brace remains open. So the athlete can still feel the floor. A gymnast can still land on the balance beam, for example, safely, because they can still feel the beam. So that's the brace we would recommend for that.
Excellent. I think we'd also throw gymnasts and dancers in with the martial arts group as well. So I want to backtrack a little bit. Earlier on in our discussion, we talked about material and the differences between kind of neoprene braces and splints and kind of newer, higher end product lines such as Push. Tell me about the material that Push uses in fabrication of their braces.
So their main material is called SimPress, which is just short for sympathetic compression, which they trademarked. It's a microfiber material that provides us with excellent breathability and really good four-way stretch and compression. It's minimal in thickness, so it allows us to use that and then add on different things to the inside or the outside of the brace. For example, silicone inlays are usually a part of our braces. And if you start with something thin like SimPress, then you're able to add these things without adding any kind of bulk to the product. So yeah, the benefits over neoprene are many. Lightweight, moisture wicking, four-way stretch, and breathable.
Now, is there any compression associated with that?
There is. It's not a graduated compression like some products offer, but it is a compression nonetheless, and sort of a natural compression that you get from the fiber. And then depending on the brace and the type of strapping used, the compression can be adjusted even more depending on what brace you're looking at.
Okay, now we're going to turn something completely different. And I want to raise the kind of the newest product that we've introduced from Push, which is the Push AFO.
Oh, okay.
Super, super interesting product. We, you know, as many of our clinicians will know, have a very broad range of AFOs that we mm-hmm. represent. I think we have about eight families of AFOs. You know, some share some similarities, obviously, outside of the fact that they all manage patients with drop foot, but they all have an element of uniqueness to them. And the Push AFO came in and absolutely filled an empty void that we had within our AFO portfolio for managing certain types of patients. So tell me about the Push AFO.
Yeah, so the AFO design basically follows the philosophy of Push that they want, as we talked about before, freedom of movement. But the other aspect of it is they don't really want braces that look medical. And most AFOs really do look rather medical. And patients, sometimes they can get taken aback by that. Sometimes they just don't like being seen to have some kind of a problem. So the more you can make a brace look like just another piece of your clothing, the better it is. And so from there, they set about designing a product. It's an off-the-shelf product, right? It's not for those people who require a very heavy-duty, custom-made articulating AFO. It's more for the greater common denominator, I would say. And it will fit into any shoe, very easily trimmed. And it doesn't require any kind of special footwear either. A lot of AFOs require that you have some kind of a lace-up shoe to make sure that it stays in position on your foot. And the Push AFO, just by the configuration of the straps, doesn't require any specific kind of shoe. You could even wear it with a slipper or a sandal if you wanted to.
I think we have, when it was first introduced, immediately my mind went to kind of a segment of the population that we really had no comfortable option to be able to offer. So I don't want to certainly limit it to this patient population, but I know that we have been very successful with it. And that is kind of that group of individuals, as you say, that, you know, perhaps don't want something quite so medical. You know, maybe they don't want or need, you know, kind of a carbon AFO or kind of a multi-articulated AFO. They need assistance. They need that Dorsey assist. They need that for stability and for balance, but they want something that's more comfortable. So we've seen kind of a group of individuals, you know, maybe your kind of gentle walkers, you know, they walk around the community, they walk around a care facility, you know, they walk around the neighborhood. They're not cycling and doing trail running and competing in triathlons. You know, they're just your average walkers. Or perhaps they, again, as you mentioned, want something that fits comfortably into a house shoe or, you know, a slipper, something on those lines. And oftentimes those individuals don't have the funding available either to be able to kind of manage some of the higher costs associated with carbon fiber AFOs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, fashion is important too. I mean, maybe they got a particular pair of shoes they want to go out with, and they still have to have that AFO to assist them in walking. With the push AFO, they've got the option. They can make it fit into virtually whatever shoe they want.
Absolutely. So the push AFO is our newest push product that's been added to the portfolio. This is a completely unfair question. I'm going to put you on the spot for it anyway. Any kind of hints as to what may be coming down the line? Any kind of teasers that we can kind of offer out there into our listening world?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's some things I can tell you about. Firstly, if people want to see more evidence about the AFO, there's some good videos on that on YouTube that show people ambulating up and down stairs and getting up and out of a chair faster and just moving more freely. But as for new products, the pandemic just messed everything up. We actually had, I think, three products that potentially would have been launched this year. But Push is very rigid in the way that they test and design their products. It can take anywhere from 5 to 7 years to get a product to market. You know, even from the idea stage, the very first initial idea comes to them for a product. There are 12 points that idea has to get a check mark next to them. If it doesn't check off all 12 points, then they pass. They pass on it and don't accept it. So they're very rigid in their thinking and very strict in their discipline about putting a new product into the market, and very adamant that it needs to be tested. And the pandemic is the thing that messed all of that up, because while Push has a great network of people that they can draw on for testing and clinicians that are cooperative, because of the pandemic and a lot of things shutting down, they just weren't able to get that new brace into that patient's use, and it had to be just delayed. They initially have to have 300 people go through the initial stages of testing a product, and then they narrow it. They bring the product back, listen to all the feedback, make some improvements here or there, and then push it out again to another 50 committed testers. And if everything goes well from there, then they'll let the product go. What we were expecting was a plantar fasciitis brace worn, not a night splint, but a brace to be worn inside your shoe that mimics plantar fasciitis taping techniques, but it does so in a permanent reusable brace. That, to me, was the biggest game changer product that Push was working on. The delay, pandemic delay for that is now spring of 2022. And I think that'll be the next thing you'll see.
That's exciting. Mm-hmm. You know, with the pandemic, and obviously we all know the ramifications of it, one of which was that, you know, there were no conferences, no shows, mm-hmm. kind of in for most of 2020 and into 2021. I don't know about you, but I miss the conferences and the shows and kind of that face-to-face interaction. But you did bring a virtual conference invitation to my attention, and I was very pleased and proud to have attended it. And that was the virtual conference that was hosted by Nia, the manufacturer. Do you want to tell our listening audience a little bit about that, you know, and if they plan on doing something like that again in the future?
Sure. Yeah. The virtual conference was really cool and did take an absolute ton of work to organize. But what it was is when you registered to enter into this Push world, if you will, it started by as if you were flying through the air and you were flying over a conference facility site similar to OT World. and then you landed outside the front door. And as you moved your cursor forward, your mouse forward, it would open up the doors and there would be somebody there to greet you. And the greeting was an avatar of one of the employees at Push welcoming you to the virtual experience, they called it, and just directing you that you could go to your left and check out products from Push, to your right, Push Sports, and be sure to go into the auditorium, which consisted of three different presentations on some existing products and also on some stuff that they were developing. So it allowed you, it was interactive. It allowed you to move around and do whatever you wanted within the space, this virtual space. And when you clicked on different things, you discovered some other area would open up for you. So it really was designed so that people would just stay for a little while, move around, play with it, and just discover some new things. Since then, we actually have reused it. You probably didn't know about this, Simon, but we used it for the Canadian Academy of Sport Medicine Conference, which is the biggest one that I attend in Canada every year. And I was most disappointed that we would not be able to attend it. We decided that we would make a Canadian version of the virtual experience. And all we did was, it looked almost exactly the same as the virtual experience that you saw, but we just added ourselves, Canadian Orthopedic, into the experience. So the videos were all of us. And the experience was more tailored to Canada. So I think it was a good success. It's not a cheap thing to do by any means, but I think that it did open some eyes, and it is something that we'll continue to do, you know, for special occasions. A big trade show, I think now will always have some aspect of virtual to it. And, you know, I hope that we can just incorporate this virtual experience that way, you know, have it open for 3 or 4 days at a time and let people, move around it and discover things at their leisure.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not a surprise to me that a company such as Push, with their level of innovation, wouldn't create an equally innovative virtual experience as well. And I'm sure that something like that comes again or will be available, we'll absolutely make sure that all of our listeners are aware of that. And so with that, I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode. And I'd like to thank Gary Elliott from Canadian Orthopedic Supply for joining us. Of course, if you have a show topic or a topic for future episodes, you can email us at positiveoutcomes@orthoped.ca. New episodes are released every other Thursday at positiveoutcomes.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive Outcomes is a production of Orthoped ULC in conjunction with our partners, produced by Jonathan Stone and Frederic Sauvé, and hosted by me, Simon Beals, and Jeff Newell. Gary, thank you so much, and thank you again for listening. Until next time.